This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of Tonic Magazine, Jamie Bussin.
Hi, I'm Jamie Bussin. I am a former commercial litigator who used to weigh 242 pounds. When I was 38 years old, I lost over 50 pounds through a regimen of exercise and better nutrition. It took me a year to reach my goal, but I thought if a type A personality like me could do it, really anybody can. I'm still asking questions and learning about what it means to live a healthy lifestyle. Please join me on this continuing journey. Today, we'll discuss your respiration with nutraceutical formulator Dr. Gordon Chang. We'll find out about the latest research into longevity with researcher Dr. David Nelson, ND. We'll learn about shamanic healing with shamanic healer Yuko Adachi. And lastly, we'll discover your attachment style as it pertains to your friendships with author Florence Ann Romano. Before we get to that, here's your tonic quick shot. The Y-Star Institute's Associate Professor Mohammed Abdel Mohsen, PhD, has demonstrated with his lab and collaborators a connection between viral damage to the gut and premature biological aging. The group found that this pro-aging connection can contribute to both gut permeability and premature systemic and intestinal tissue aging in people living with chronic HIV infection. When people's bodies age faster than their chronological years, a condition known as accelerated biological aging, they become more vulnerable to serious health issues usually seen in older adults, including cancers, heart disease, brain disorders, severe infections, and reduced vaccine effectiveness. Dr. Abdel Mohsen investigated what drives this rapid aging and how to create ways to slow down biological aging and improve health. A prime suspect in this aging puzzle is the gut microbiome and its potential leakage into the bloodstream. The Abdel Mohsen lab investigated how gut leakage can impact the immune system and lead to chronic inflammation, which may accelerate aging. To delve into this question, Dr. Abdel Mohsen and colleagues analyzed samples from people living with chronic HIV infection. Their analysis revealed a significant connection between disrupted gut microbiomes, increased intestinal permeability, that's leaky gut, and faster biological aging. Notably, they observed a connection between accelerated biological aging and the microbiomes of both the colon and ileum, but not the fecal microbiome. Question: what's the best way to make sure you're getting the most up-to-date and accurate health and wellness information? Answer: the Tonic newsletter, of course. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. I'll be joined by Dr. Gordon Chang in a moment, but first, a little bit of business. I'd like to give a shout out to our long-standing sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian-owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000-square-foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com. Omega Alpha's products are created by their scientific team headed by their owner, operator, and CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Dr. Chang holds a PhD in physiology and biomedical engineering from the University of Toronto. He also has 2 years postdoctoral experience in clinical biochemistry, looking at free radicals and antioxidants. He's published over 20 peer-reviewed articles and conference proceedings. And of course, he's a regular and a favorite on this show. Welcome back, Gordon. How are you doing?
Very good, Jimmy. And thank you again for having me on board once more.
Always a pleasure. So, as crazy as it sounds, wildfire season is set to start earlier this year across Canada, with some fires burning all winter under the peat moss. And those are called zombie fires, which is kind of freaking me out. And these pollutants affect air quality for everyone and thus impact our immunity. And something we can't see are the particulates, and air quality reports speak to this daily. So the question is, how does the body manage particulates, and can we do anything to support respiratory pathways? So I thought it would be helpful to bring you back on the show and talk about those things. What do you think?
That's a good topic to speak on. But one of the things that I just wanted to touch on before we even go down that pathway is that we also had a very, very mild winter.
Yep.
So what that normally means is that we're going to have a very early spring.
Yes.
And what that also means is that allergy season is going to kick in really early. And it ties into the respiratory pathways because, again, we have, whenever people have allergies, you have issues with the respiratory pathways. So people who have asthma, for example, if you put allergies on top of that, and then you have particulates on top of that, it just makes the asthma, it makes breathing a lot more difficult. And what I'm trying to tie all these things together is that there's one final common pathway to all of these things. Again, we talk about inflammation of the tissue, all right? And there are so many different things in the body that is caused by inflammation. And that inflammation, again, is one of the things that people know about, but we don't think about it too much because we think of inflammation in the aspects of swelling of tissues, etc. But there's subclinical inflammation. So even things like mucus production is caused by inflammation. So getting back again to respiratory health, right? Even the production of mucus when we get exposed to particulates, right, is a form of inflammation. So what we try to do is to how can we lessen inflammation to the whole body, to the body as a whole.
Right.
And there are several different things that people have used in the past for inflammation. And some of these things target the lung tissue. And by the lung tissue, I'm talking about the bronchioles, etc., mm-hmm. right? The airways, right? Because most of the issues that you would have with breathing is mucus formation, and you also have issues with contraction of the bronchioles. So it makes it more difficult to breathe. So even if you have allergies, you have that happening. Another thing we have with allergies is that sometimes you have swelling of the sinuses, which again is a form of inflammation. So there are different things that people can use to help with some of these things.
Right.
So there are herbs that people have used in the past that seem to work very well. Okay. Things like chrysanthemum flower, things like Japanese honeysuckle, things like the Chinese skullcap root. All these things help. There are things like the fritillaria bulb. These things all help. One of the things I always talk about is formulations. Because people will go run out and they buy one herb and they say, oh, this one doesn't work on me. But you know what? If you get something that's a formulated product that has a lot of these different herbs all in one, chances are it will work very good for you. Now, this is more, I would say, on the helping to get rid of some of the symptoms side of a coin. The other things that people have done to help get rid of some of the symptoms, simple as taking antioxidants. One of the biggest ones for the allergies is really something, quercetin. But if you add to that something, hesperidin and rutin, they also help with allergy symptoms.
Are you talking about sort of like the mucus buildup and the congestion in the
breathing?
That's
right. Okay. That's all part of respiratory health when
right.
we talk about it. I know one of the questions that people ask is, what can we do to prepare for this?
Right.
For the coming allergy season, for the coming fire season, for the particulates and so on. And even I would like to lump in people who do a lot, who smoke,
yeah.
right, to help clear out the lungs. There are herbs that we know that will help, for want of a better way of saying it, clean out the lungs. And what that does is that it helps loosen particulates. I have to clarify when I say loosen particulates, because the problem with particulates, when it gets deep down into the lung tissue itself, it's there for life. It's not coming out. Where you want to get the particulates is when they get trapped in the mucus before they get deep down into the lungs. Okay? And with the particulates, there are herbs which will help get rid of some of these particulates, right? Because it helps, they act as an expectorant. They help bring up some of the mucus. It helps clean up some of the mucus. So these are some of the things that you'd want to use. right?
Is this, Gordon, like a lung cleanse?
Like a lung cleanse or a lung flush, for want of a better way of saying it.
Okay.
So it's a way of preparing your system for the upcoming season.
Got it. Okay.
Right? So there are products out there that you can use for this, right? And these are, I call them, it attacks from a symptomatic point of view. And I know people don't like the word symptomatic, right? Mm-hmm. Because they think, oh, we should be getting down to the root cause. Well, the root cause of particulates getting into your lungs is really the fires. And unless you have a way of putting out all the fires in Alberta and in BC, good luck of getting to the root cause, right? But we can deal with some of the outcomes of these particulates. Now, another thing that people don't even think about, they only think about the particulates, right? But there's a lot of chemicals in the air, too.
Right.
And one of the things with the chemicals is that when the chemicals, for example, in smoke, gets absorbed, it sets up a chemical-type reaction because it gets absorbed by the body, then it goes to the liver tries to get rid of it, etc. So, again, doing a cleanse, a liver cleanse, is also a good idea. And the analogy I always use to, I tell everybody, I have seasonal allergies.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle of winter, I have no seasonal allergies.
Right.
But I know I'm allergic to cigarette smoke. Now, back in the day, when I used to when bars still had cigarette smoke or restaurants, I would go in the middle of winter, say November, December, when it's cold and you're inside. I could sit in a bar filled with smoke, and I'm good for like a couple of hours before I have to get out. In the springtime, when my allergies are going full blast, if I sit in there for more than 10 minutes, I'm doing good. So in about 10, 15 minutes, I have to get out. But what the reason I bring this analogy up is because in the winter, the toxin load on my body is a lot lower.
Right.
Because I don't have the allergens, etc., but the seasonal allergens. Whereas in the springtime, my body is already reacting to all the allergens, so it's already primed. So my load to my system is a lot higher.
Right. It's a cumulative effect.
Right. So this is why I advocate, as a way of preparing for the upcoming season, do a full liver cleanse also to get rid of some of those toxins.
So we've mentioned two cleanses, like a lung flush, I think you called it, and a, mm-hmm. and a liver cleanse. Both of those are, from a nutraceutical perspective, those are ingested, right?
That's correct.
I presume they're liquids?
Like they're liquids, or some people have it in a capsule form. But if it's a herbal product, I tend to prefer the liquids because the active ingredients are not usually dried out, and so they are in the active molecules are in a form which is hasn't been denatured.
So when if you're correct, and there's a cumulative effect of both the allergens and these particulates, when is a good time? Is now the time to do it?
I would say right now is probably a good time because we know it's coming down the pipes not even a few weeks. Because I heard on the radio they were saying that the fire season has already started in places like Alberta.
Wow!
Right, so sooner the better.
Okay, so I know you have these products. Like, so what's involved in a lung flush? Is it like you're taking this liquid over the span of a week, or is it a day? Like, how does it work?
What we do a very gentle lung cleanse and a gentle liver flush, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you do, you take it over every day over a period of a month, right?
Okay.
It's like taking a vitamin pill in the morning. The only thing is you do it over a month. And the reason we advocate doing it slowly is because for some people, if you already have a lot of toxins, you may get a reaction to it because the body's trying to get rid of the toxins too quickly, right?
Okay.
For some people, it is not an issue. It just depends on the person. So for me, it's better safe than sorry. If you've never done one before, do it slow. If you've done them in the past and you know how your body reacts, you can do it faster. Simple as that.
Okay. And I presume, like, this is safe for everybody to take, or are there any contraindications?
It is safe for everybody to take. A lot of people use it. I have people who have respiratory health issues and found that when they do, like, the lung cleanse, they seem to do a lot better, right, even on the medication that they're on. for helping some of these respiratory health issues.
I think it's also like helpful to do a little bit of spring cleaning. Like I, you know, when my allergies start kicking up, I always change the filter on the furnace, right?
Like, for sure. And that's basically what we're trying to do. I mean, there's no filters in there for us to change, but we can just go clean it out. I explain it by the analogies, like, you know, your house is dusty, you come in with a broom and you sweep it every so often. You can never get rid of all the dust. But what you're trying to do is to keep ahead of most of it.
Right.
One of the other things I'd like to advocate to is the use of these antioxidants.
Right. Okay.
Right? Just because the final common pathways for a lot of these issues is inflammation. While I can safely say every single antioxidant known to man is an anti-inflammatory, right? But not every anti-inflammatory is an antioxidant. So, again, wide range of fruits and vegetables in your meals, and failing that, get something that has a good antioxidant mix in the product.
Okay, are there antioxidants that do particularly well in helping us with lung inflammation? Or
yes, I've mentioned a few of them before. Quercetin is really one of them, right? Vitamin C is also one of them. Okay, taking hesperidin, rutin, all those are good.
Okay.
So what I'm trying to advocate is a wide range.
Got it. Because you're talking about overall getting rid of the free radicals, et cetera, and the toxins generally from your system, which will...
That's true. Because what people don't realize is that even though we're talking about, say, particulates and chemicals coming through the lungs, when we eat stuff, and there's a lot of, if we eat a lot of things that has a lot of toxins and so on, or even if the body itself generates its own toxins, that in itself can cause inflammation in the lungs.
Right.
Right? So when people say, oh, something, I just need it for the lung. No, you need something that affects the entire body.
Makes sense. And of course, obviously, you know, if it's a particularly smoggy day, or, you know, if we know that the smoke has made its way into the big smoke, you know, staying indoors is probably helpful.
That
too,
is right? Also the common sense approach. If we're talking about respiratory health, I mean, don't exercise on the outside if the outside is smoky and smoggy.
Right.
Stay indoors. You know, it's one of the ways of preventing the inflammation and the allergy response, or because even when we respond to particulates in the air, it is a form of an allergy response too.
Makes total sense. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me on again.
That was Dr. Gordon Chang. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we're going to discuss new trends in longevity on The Tonic. Attention men over 50. Do you search for restrooms everywhere you go? Wake up several times at night just to go pee again? Are symptoms of a benign enlarged prostate taking over? Prostate Perform helps reduce the urgency and frequency of pesky pit stops in as little as 7 to 10 days. Available exclusively through natural health food stores. To ensure these products are right for you, always follow label directions. Tired of lineups at your pharmacist? Why not try Pharma-Z at the Zoomer Store? Powered by the Health Depot, an Ontario-accredited pharmacy, Pharma-Z offers a concierge approach to filling, refilling, and managing your prescriptions with free delivery anywhere in Ontario. To get started, visit zoomerstore.com and click on Pharma-Z. And then click on the Circle of Care Pharmacy program for your free initial consultation with a clinical pharmacist. Don't wait. Go today.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of Tonic Magazine, Jamie Bussin.
David Nelson is invited faculty at the Nova Institute for Health of People, Places, and Planet, located in Baltimore, Maryland. He attended the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, is a health, food, retail, and wellness service business owner, and he's written numerous academic articles. His latest establishes the importance of acid-alkaline balance of the foods that we eat, and he lives in Woodstock with his family. Welcome back to the show, David. How are you?
Not too bad, Jamie. Thank you very much for having me back on the show.
So, lots of people have turned their minds to how we can all live a longer life. Like, longevity is certainly a hot-button issue. So you want to step up and talk a little about some of the research that's out there so that we can all live longer and better lives? What do you think?
Yeah, I think, late 90s, a book came out called Boom Bust Echo by David K. Foote that talked about the population demographics and the number of people in the population in those age brackets. Well, it turns out the boomers are one-third of the population in Canada.
Right.
They're approaching, in 2000, the first one turned 65, and we did that for the next 20 years. So we had that generation, or 25 years, so that generation's currently ending. So we have one-third of the Canadian population in a place where they're really concerned about aging well. So that sets the stage for all the medicine and interventions in biomed, in lifestyle medicine, in many different places that are trying to figure out how do we live not only longer, but better longer.
Why is it important? Like, what are some of the issues as to why we should be looking at longevity?
That's a phenomenal question. And it comes down to, I feel, two things. Mm-hmm. One is quality of life. And then the second one is the social burden of disease, regardless of what that disease is, whether it's communicable or non-communicable. We know now that non-communicable diseases like heart disease, cancer, diabetes, these things actually have things that are, we can offset your risk if we do them. And they outnumber the communicable diseases now. So we have to shift our focus on what are we focusing on. And number two, what's your quality of life? If you feel poorly for the last 20 years of your life, like, that's not an existence that you nor I want for ourselves, nor society at large. So I think those are the two things on the table for longevity. What's the social burden of not being well, and what's the inner experience of a person of not being well?
Yeah, I mean, I say this as a man in my 50s. I will probably feel differently as I get older, but my mind turns to quality of life more than anything else, and what I can do about the quality of life, because I'm not sure how much I'm going to be able to impact longevity in and of itself with my lifestyle choices. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's the way I feel.
Well, there's a scientist by the name of Steve Horvath, and Horvath's clock. And what he does is he looks at the epigenetic markers on certain aspects of your DNA.
Right.
And he can give you a reasonable estimate, 95%+, on your longevity. Now, those epigenetic factors, they potentially can change over time. They're influenceable to some degree.
Yeah.
But we're still trying to figure out what is it about aging that we can intervene in.
Right.
So there are a few things that we might be able to do.
All right. So let's explore some of the recent research as to what we can do to impact our wellness as we get older. Where do you want to start?
Right. Well, I mean, let's start with something that hopefully will get people interested, called senolytics. And senolytics, there's a particular class of cell in the human body and in other mammals as well, called senescent cells. And what a senescent cell means, it stays alive, but it stops dividing, which means that it's just floating around there, causing or triggering chronic inflammation, unfortunately. So we have these senescent cells, and they just linger around. They trigger inflammation. These are low-grade chronic inflammation that stirs up the immune system, and then we have a whole host of problems about triggering things like arterial inflammation, maybe cardiometabolic issues, maybe diabetes. So what do we have to do with these senescent cells that seem to contribute to the oxidative stress of aging? There are compounds that are being developed synthetically and ones already in existence that seem to be able to tag and get rid of some of these cells. Now, some of your listeners are probably going to be most familiar with the one that has a lot of research behind it right now in the natural product space, and that's quercetin.
Yep.
So quercetin seems to be this molecule that has a lot of properties that are pluripotent. It does many jobs. This seems to be one. It seems to be able to put pressure on these senescent cells, help the body to clear them, reducing some inflammation and keeping the body feeling, you know, or looking at itself in a younger way because these senescent cells have been cleared.
What about AI and digital health aids? Where do we go from there?
Well, AI is really interesting because two things are going to happen with AI. AI is going to be able to give us precision medicine, meaning that it's going to be able to connect dots in your health that a computer running an algorithm that's linear or a human wouldn't be able to make. And it's going to do that with probably a couple with sensors, so real-time data acquisition, meaning like your smartwatch. Maybe it's real-time glucose monitoring. Maybe it's your blood pressure. Maybe it's your heart rate. We're already getting some in heart rate variability, which can give us insight into how relaxed you are during the day or at night before you go to sleep. And then AI is going to be able to say, hey, this person is going to do well with this, this, and this. Based on their chemistry, and there's this technology being developed called digital twins, where you have a model of your body's biochemistry running on your phone, and you ask it if a drug or a herb or something will interact well with you or not, and then the AI builds you a customized plan just for you. It's not for anybody else. It's based on your rhythms, your physiology, your biology, and what we know about machine learning. AI is able to now extrapolate something that's valuable. Now, this is what's being sold. Is this reality? Is this going to happen? I think there's a really good chance that there will be something of value out of that.
So I guess in tailoring this medicine, it's biologically compatible, or is it ruling out what is non-biologically compatible? Like, what's the goal there? How far can it go?
Yeah, right. Great question. Yeah, so what is... How much can a digital twin and AI mimic a human?
Yeah.
So you raise a good question. So what you're talking about now is something that is being looked at called computational functionalism. And that means that how can we compute the entire function of a kidney?
Right.
This is what's being asked.
Yeah.
So that's what a digital twin seeks to see. You're going to have a kidney module, a heart module, a brain module, you know, a quadricep muscle module, and then AI will kit together all these things in a way where an algorithm will determine if it works well together. As the philosophers will say, a model of a kidney is not a kidney.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, so in some sense, ultimately, no. But in some sense, we're going to get more resolution into why some things might work for some people and not for others.
But that still begs the question. So even if you had that knowledge, I wonder if everybody would act on it, right? For various reasons.
Well, sure.
Whether they have the resources or whether they actually are going to get around to doing it. Like, so for example...
Well, as a, you're asking the right person. I'm a health food store retail owner. I work on my retail floor every Saturday in my store.
Right.
And people will come in and their blood glucose levels are over 10. And I say to them, are you eating enough fiber? Are you eating your fruits and vegetables? Are you exercising X number of minutes? And they'll say to me, look me in the eye, and it's a very honest moment between us.
Right.
No, I know I should, but I'm not.
Right.
And you raise the most important question of all. How do people take action?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a valuable tool, but it's almost mm-hmm. I think in some circumstances it might be daunting. Like, I'd be afraid mm-hmm. that the AI model would say, okay, JD, like, you know what? You got so much going on there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you're really going to be able to do everything that's necessary to fix yourself. Like, at some point,
yeah.
having that information may be counterintuitive, I think.
Well, this is another thing that, see, I'm actually working on this with someone at the University of Zurich on digital twins. Her name's Carolina Fitch. She's one of the world experts on digital twins and
yeah.
AI modeling. So we met this past year at our Nova Institute conference, and we agreed to do some work together. And so this is a big deal. And what you're talking about is something we talk about. How much information is too much information? Does the person receiving the information have the education, the understanding, the knowledge to be able to digest the information and act upon it accordingly? Like, you're asking an excellent question. So these are all things we talk about in terms of longevity. Like, longevity, it's also like, in order to do it, there's certain educational requirements digitally. There might be financial requirements.
Of
you
course.
Know, we have to ask these questions about how we go about this. However, to kind of wrap it up, I'll tell you, there is a lot exciting happening about longevity. And as a 50-year-old person myself, this April 2nd, I'll say that I'm more interested in certain biomedical solutions like continuous glucose monitoring
yeah.
than I've ever been in my life now as an older person.
Well, that makes sense. I suppose, you know, in being sort of cynical about whether people will execute, I don't know. I guess maybe those AI models are going to have to be so good, they're going to literally have to spoon feed us our medicine. Maybe that's the answer. To my mind, it's almost like a computer nanny state where, like, computers say, if you don't do this, you're going to die. And then,
right.
you know, obstinately not doing it. I mean, how many things do we not do that we know
right.
are bad for us? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Well, there's some studies that show that, like, interestingly, when McDonald's added salads to the menu, they sold more burgers and fries.
For sure. They're no dopes. They know exactly.
Yeah, right. The longevity piece now is I want to live well for my kids. I got two young
exactly.
kids. That's a huge incentive for me. So I guess maybe my incentives to activate some of these longevity things are social. And that social pressure means that I want to fulfill my obligations to my family in a way that is meaningful to society and hopefully maybe pass that on to my kids. Is that enough of an incentive in society to maybe enact some of these good behaviors?
We'll find out. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much, Jamie. Take care.
That was David Nelson. We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss shamanic healing on The Tonic.
I'd like to give a shout out to our longstanding sponsor, Omega Alpha. This company is 100% Canadian owned. Their team consists of allopathic and naturopathic doctors, nutritionists, researchers, and other scientific professionals, all led by their CEO, Dr. Gordon Chang. Formulations are created on their 40,000 square foot facility located in Toronto. Omega Alpha uses only the highest quality ingredients to manufacture the most efficacious yet price-friendly nutraceuticals. For more information about Omega Alpha, visit OmegaAlpha.com.
Attention men over 50. Do you search for restrooms everywhere you go? Wake up several times at night just to go pee again? Are symptoms of a benign enlarged prostate taking over? Prostate Perform helps reduce the urgency and frequency of pesky pit stops in as little as 7 to 10 days. Available exclusively through natural health food stores. To ensure these products are right for you, always follow label directions.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of Tonic Magazine, Jamie Bussin.
Yuko Adachi is a gifted Japanese artist who is divinely guided to channel light codes to illuminate the soul, seeking to inspire and heal through her visual medicinal art and shamanic healing practices. She attended the Art Institute of Boston at Lesley University, Massachusetts College of Art, and she also went to the School of Museum of Fine Arts, where she was a top student making the dean's list. Since then, Yuko has received multiple international awards, acknowledging her talents, and has been featured in over 53 exhibitions around the world. Welcome to the show, Yuko. How are you?
I'm so good and so excited to share whatever is to come. And yes, please ask me any questions.
Oh, you don't want me doing that. I think you want me asking very, very straightforward questions that are completely in your wheelhouse. And I think, you know, most of our listeners may not be aware of what a shamanic healer does. What does it mean to be a shamanic healer?
Yes. So first of all, I consider myself as a cosmic ascension guide. And what is cosmic ascension guide is it is a soul who has been appointed by the universe to assist in the ascension process of humanity. So I have been appointed by the universe. It sounds so wild to you, maybe it does to me as well, but it's in the soul contract, because when we are birthed into the earth, we actually decide on what type of life and what is our mission. So I came with an awareness to have my work for the role of the universe to be an ascension guide for the cosmos. And having said that, how do I bring it to life is by doing the shamanic work and also by being the channel of light codes, because I am the conduit between the higher light and the humanity. So I act as a bridge. So I use my body to bring the experience of what I know in the higher realm directly to the human. So for instance, with the shamanic work, I am bringing the light through my body. You have to let go of my ego, and I bring all the power that you are needing inside your body. And I do that by channeling the light codes. So the light code is a certain type of a frequency that can really enhance your internal power, because in shamanism, we believe that when your internal power is in imbalance, you will lose your sovereignty, or you will lose the contact with your soul wisdom. So I am here to bring that back to you.
Okay. So if you're working with light codes with somebody who you're helping, what does that work look like, and what could one hope to achieve once they attain that balance?
So what is really happening, and the beautiful thing about light codes and the shamanism, it comes in hand, is When I am working as a conduit of light for you, something that you cannot physically see, I can see. I will be your eyes to see something beyond the realm of physical eyes because my third eye is activated. So I could see certain parts in your body where you need a healing. So for instance, if you believe in chakra system, to me it's not belief or not, it just happens. It does exist that you have like certain points and center of energy in your body where it responds to memory in your body. And I will start to see certain area in your body is stagnant, or let's say in the color it's quite dark, or it has this energy of heaviness. So I go into your energetic realm as a conduit, and then I will have my spirit guides, they are the one who is leading the whole session, to ask me or allow me to be helping you to take out certain things that is not needed in you, and then bringing in the light codes that you are needing. And light codes is a part of a light language. It is the way you translate, like somebody like me will translate it into words or into frequency of like a music or a body movement or a healing light. So there is a way that I will translate it to you, and I will do it by normally singing. I will tune into your body, and I will start to see the areas where you need vibration. So my voice will become a vibrational healing code. So I'm downloading the light codes, and then you will be receiving that. And because there is no boundary between energies, I have a lot of clients that I work remotely, and it's just as powerful as if I am in your presence. Because again, the boundary of energy, there isn't. I can just reach to you, I can see you, and then I will start sending the light that belongs to you, and then take out things that doesn't belong to you. But it is the unity of working in three, your higher self, my higher self, and the assistance of the divine. So we really surrender and give ourselves to the magic of the what the universe has to offer. And I am just the conduit working between the higher light and your body to bring your own divinity.
Okay, so if I were inclined to ask for your help, having reasonable expectations, what sort of things could you help me with?
So I can only talk from my experience.
Sure.
But let's say a lot of people have trapped trauma. It can be the trauma from your childhood. A lot of people have trauma, especially with your parents or siblings or who have raised you. So there is this trauma that we have a tendency to hide them because we feel shameful or guilty or some dark part of your life that you want to look at. And there's also trauma that has been passed on to you generationally. So it's not even in your experience, but through your parents, grandparents, everything that have experienced through your DNA, mm-hmm. it's embedded as a code inside your body. So you're carrying the trauma from this lifetime through generation. And on top of it, our life didn't start today. Before you were Jamie, you were somebody else in reincarnation. So you also have information from your past life. So there is a lot of unhealed wounds going on. And you come to me and you express yourself what is happening to you internally. And because the healing of energy is a layered work, just like any physical therapy, we go layer by layer. But you show up and you tell me what happened to you, what is your struggle, then I would go and see what type of shamanic healing is appropriate for you. For instance, if you feel like your parents, even though they're deceased, feels like you are always judged by them, or if you have to get validation from them, I can cut the cords. Because the cord is this energetic energy that you leak your energy to the other person, and you are losing your power. So by cutting the course between you amicably, and then with the understanding of your higher self and the person's higher self who has attached you the cord, we can get a clean cut. And what that means is you'll be liberated from this heavy energy that has been making you feel trapped and draining. So a lot of my clients will express their feeling of freedom, a new sense of growing confidence, and they get connected to their inner unlimited joy and spark that they never felt before.
Okay, so you perform something called psychic surgery. Can you explain what that is and what that looks like and how one would experience that?
Yes, so psychic surgery is just like a physical surgery in our 3D realm. So we are talking from the base of energy. So everything is energy, And even though you look well outside, if you have something trapped in your body, for instance, lots of people have throat chakra closed. So if you are not able to speak your truth, you would feel this tightness, heaviness, even pain that feels like somebody is pressing your throat or even your heart. So when you decide to have psychic surgery, I will go into your energetic body inside your throat. And then I would go and do certain shamanic energy healing to release that trapped emotion with your permission. I will not do anything without your permission, because ultimately everybody's will is what you are allowing anything to happen. So everything is under your responsibility. I am not the healer. Everybody, you are your own healer. And I'm just here to assist in you becoming your divine healer yourself. So I would lift this heaviness inside you with your acceptance, and then bring in the light codes, the healing medicine, and you will literally feel the opening up your throat. And I just had a client who had experienced that with me. And towards the end of our session, she will be coughing. Like she explained to me, as if some type of ashes were inside her. So she was able to revive her throat that has been almost like a dense, like a tight stone. It's now like releasing so much physically. And that's what happens. The shamanic experience of any psychic surgery is something, is a personal experience that everybody can have through your bodily sensations and your spirit. So you will start to notice somewhere you didn't notice before that you are not just bound to this physical body, but there is a spiritual body, there's energetic body, that once you are able to clean that part of you, it's like taking something out of you. And then I feel that space with light. So much magical things happen to you. And after this, people might go into serious fatigue because your body is adjusting to the surgery on the energetic level that happens. So they might need to sleep in bed for 2 days, or some people might get fever, or some people even have diarrhea as a sign of releasing. So it's very physically connected to your body that you will know that something has shifted. And just going back to cutting cords, when we cut the cords, the somebody that has been cut the cord on the other side, even they don't know about it, they also feel the shift in the change of their energetic body. For instance, they will reach out to you. It happens. It's almost like a magic.
Interesting. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Jamie. I had a wonderful time.
We have to take a short break, but when we return, we'll discuss attachment styles and friendships on The Tonic.
Big Carrot is a worker-owned natural food market that's been committed to local, organic, non-GMO, and sustainable food systems since 1983. They're a one-stop shop offering produce, grocery, bulk, body care, and holistic dispensary. The juice and smoothie bars and kitchens serve up hundreds of healthy dishes and drinks daily. Building community is at the core of their vision, which they deliver through education, outreach, and giving. They want everyone to share in the goodness they offer. Visit their website for more information at thebigcarrot.ca.
Welcome back to The Tonic, your prescription for a healthier and happier life. Here's your host and publisher of Tonic Magazine, Jamie Bussin.
Florence Ann Romano is a personal growth strategist, author, philanthropist, and businesswoman with a sparkling personality. After spending more than 15 years as a child care provider, Florence Ann, formerly known as the Windy City Nanny, is the authority on child care and family and village support in this new millennium. Born and raised just outside of Chicago, she wants to show people that not only is the saying it takes a village true, but also how important the need for community is. Her latest book is Build Your Village, A Guide to Finding Joy and Community in Every Stage of Life. Welcome to the show, Florence Ann. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me. Thrilled to be here.
So today we're going to talk about attachment styles, which, you know, candidly, in all the years that I've been on air, I've never discussed before. So we should probably start at the top. What is an attachment style?
Well, an attachment style starts as young as when you're a baby, honestly. It comes with the experience that you've had when you were a child. It's formed with those interactions you've had with your caregivers, your parents, whomever it was that was important in kind of that parental role for you. And it influences your feelings, your thoughts, your behaviors. And then all of that experience then becomes kind of the roadmap to how you navigate other meaningful relationships in your adulthood. So I think oftentimes people think of attachment style and think romantic, but we also have friendships, you know, and that's of the platonic nature. And attachment styles also apply there as well, because what's the common denominator? Those are relationships.
Okay, so is this innate, or is this something that we develop as we grow?
Well, you develop it as you grow, in that there are different kinds of attachment styles that, again, based on your experience, you are going to end up kind of working through. So, for example, you know, here during this conversation, we're going to focus on, there's four altogether, but I'm really going to focus on three. There's the anxious attachment style, avoidant attachment style. Then there's kind of a hybrid of those things, which is disorganized attachment style. We're not going to spend as much time there. And then the secure attachment style, which I think everybody wants, right? You're going to sit there and be like, I'm definitely secure in all my relationships. I have nothing to work on. But the anxious and the avoidant. Anxious comes from when oftentimes, you know, you find yourself thinking, oh gosh, I haven't talked to this person in a while. They're not reaching out to me. I wonder if they still like me. I wonder if they still love me. If they're not paying attention to me, does that mean they don't care for me anymore? And you start to kind of go down that rabbit hole. And then with the avoidant, sometimes it's hard to let that guard down, to let people see you vulnerably and honestly. And you try to keep that arm's length because you don't want people to see you too deeply. So maybe you are a little avoidant, you know, going there with certain people in certain circumstances in your life. And then there's secure, where I think we all want to be, we all want to get there in every relationship, where you can have your independence, but also feel very assured that your relationships are all intact. So this can ebb and flow as you get older. And again, as your adult life experiences happen, you can see yourself perhaps identify in one of these camps more than the other. But one of the top questions I get is, if you relate to being or identify to being anxious, does that mean you're always going to have that attachment style? Do you ever have the chance to change that? And of course you do. We're evolving creatures that can learn and grow from that self-actualization that we can explore. So certainly you can make changes here. But again, the most important thing is figuring out, kind of like a doctor, diagnosing the issue, and then you can start working on it from there.
So if that's so, if we all have a style, or we sort of drift between styles, we should probably understand those styles a little bit better. So what are some of the pros and cons? Why don't we start with anxious? So I imagine there's a lot of cons, but are there pros to being an anxious attachment style
person? Absolutely. You know, when you are an anxious person, where you're kind of, I suppose, overanalyzing, or just let's say analyzing the situation, sometimes that can lead you to being a very sensitive person about, you know, regarding other people's feelings. And that's a really wonderful quality about a person, where you care about how other people feel and how are you affecting their energy and their space and the imprints you're leaving upon their heart. That's wonderful. So being curious, or being cognizant rather of that, that is absolutely a positive. And then even a positive for the avoidant. You never want to be that person that is overly sharing all the time, or, you know, constantly, you know, needing from somebody, because you're always needing to, you know, work through a problem, or you can't get through the day without, you know, asking someone for their advice. I can't do this alone. Oh my gosh. You know, so being aware that you don't want to necessarily burden people all the time with everything that you're feeling and working through, that's also very kind of you, to know that there are things that you can work out with others and be be transparent about, be vulnerable about, but then also know that it's also up to you to be working through things on your own as well, so that when you do go to others for advice, you feel like it's productive time, it's active time. It's not you feeling like you're constantly fluttering and kind of just erratic in all of your feelings all the time, that you can kind of get your thoughts together so the conversation, that person in the conversation, can feel they're being set up for success to be helpful.
Are there any downsides to having a secure attachment style?
I did think that there wouldn't be any downsides to that. But in a secure attachment style, I think the only caveat to that is you don't want to allow yourself to feel so overly confident in your friendships that you stop putting in the work. Every relationship we have in life, whether it's platonic or romantic, you need to have communication. You need to have trust. You need to make sure that the other people in your life are feeling seen, heard, and understood, that you're putting in the time to nourish those relationships and cultivate them and show up for each other. I'm not talking about tit for tat. I'm not talking about keeping score, but knowing that you, again, are an active part of those relationships in a healthy way, you're not breeding resentment, or you're not leaving people in the dark all the time wondering how they feel about you. Understanding people's different ways of communicating their love and their kindness, and also accepting people for who they are and where they are in their life. And also understanding that sometimes friendships or relationships end at a certain point. I think we have a hard time accepting that certain relationships are only here in our lives for a season. And the more that we can understand and accept that not everything is forever, I think it helps set ourselves up for success in our relationships, because things end for different reasons. And I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves and other people to create a situation where the relationship or friendship has to remain because you feel too bad about failing at it. But sometimes there is a natural end to things, and accepting that in a friendship as well as a romantic relationship is equally as important.
Yeah. Okay. So in hearing what you had to say about the attachment styles, it occurs to me that you actually need a requisite level of self-awareness before you could possibly be able to sort of move towards the secure style. Would you agree with that?
Oh my goodness. Everything is self-awareness, I would say. Yes. And that's the first part of all this work, is knowing thyself and not being ashamed at whatever the answer is as well. Whatever camp you fall into here, just, you know, accept it and say, okay, there's things I want to work on here. And now I know more, so I can do better.
It's that age old paradigm. Are we who we are, or do we actually have the capacity to grow? And I meet lots of different people through being a publisher and being a talk show host. And I would say, I don't know that everybody has the capacity to be self-aware, or it's certainly a sliding scale. There's certain people that are very good at it and certain people who are absolutely not good at it at all.
Not everybody does have the capacity or the propensity to change. You have to want it. You know, I always talk about it in my book, Build Your Village, that I can give you all the tips and tricks to finding a community and finding your people and finding connection. But if I give you the directions, you still have to get in the car and drive there. So you have to want it. And that's most things in life. If you want to change, then you will. If you really don't want it that deeply, it's not really written on your heart in that way, then you're probably not going to. But you have to want it. No one else can make you.
But is wanting it enough, do you think?
No, you're right. Wanting it isn't enough. You actually have to be active about changing it. And that's right. It's actions that speak louder than words. I could tell you and I could both sit here and be like, yep, I want to change. Yep, want to do it. But then you actually don't take the steps to do it. So no, you're right. Wanting isn't enough. You actually have to do it.
I'm a person who struggles with change. Most of my life, with the major changes that I've had, and I've had many of them, I resist it until it's demonstrated to me that I have no choice. So when I hear people talk about change, I often wonder about it. It doesn't come naturally to me. I've succeeded in doing so, but it's a struggle for me, and I think there's a lot of people like that.
I agree. And I would say that it depends on what the change is. You know, is it small? Is it something in your life that's bite-sized and you feel like, okay, I can do that. That's not going to cause too many ripple effects in my life. It's not, that's not, too much of a blow. But I think those intensity levels are very, very different. And so I think that's what it comes down to, is that discernment as well. I think as you get older, we all are, you know, creatures of habit. We don't necessarily want to change. We become more set in our ways.
Yeah.
But if you're doing things that are hurting others, if you're doing things that are really affecting your relationships in negative ways, and that's like the common denominator, that's the big takeaway is, wow, I'm losing people left and right. Wow, I'm waking up really depressed. My mental health and emotional health is suffering, and I'm getting, you know, some really interesting feedback from people. And what am I doing that's turning people off here? That might be sobering enough for you really to want to make some changes. Maybe not change completely, but if it starts affecting your life and your mental and emotional health, most of the time you're probably going to start trying to figure out how to make changes. And they might be small, but I hope that you are going to try to figure out something to change it, because again, at the end of the day, it's how it's making you feel, and you don't want to feel that way anymore. Is that going to be enough to help you change it?
Thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Thanks to all my wonderful guests, Dr. Gordon Chang, David Nelson, Yuko Adachi, and Florence Ann Romano. And thank you all for listening to The Tonic. You can listen or download this episode as a podcast with full show notes, contact information for our guests, and links at thetonic.ca. To find out more about the show, you can always follow us at It's The Tonic on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. For more timely, up-to-date, and accurate health and wellness information, subscribe to The Tonic newsletter. Now distributed once a week, The Tonic newsletter, with content curated personally by me, will keep you in the loop. There's contests, prizes, insider scoops, and so much more. Visit www.thetonic.ca and sign up today. If you're interested in providing feedback or suggesting topics for the show, you can always email me at jamie@thetonic.ca. On our next show, we'll discuss the health and wellness issues that are important to you. Until then, this is Jamie Bussin wishing you a healthy and happy week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.